Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another edition of the Coughing on the Microphone Nathan Powell
episode. Start over. Just start over. I'm sick as a dog. Just start over.
I think we already have our intro. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. Jesus Christ. Three, two, one. And welcome back to another edition of the Dynasty Tradecast. I, as always, am your host, Eric Bertzlaff, better known on Twitter as @DynastyTrades. Joined by my two co-hosts, Nathan, Dan. What's going on, guys?
What's going on? I'm back. I'm relieved of my family duties for at least 40 minutes. So let's make it happen, boys.
You know, 40 minutes without family duties, enough to make some more family duties, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's like that, you'd have like 14 kids in that time, Dan.
Yeah, you would definitely know about that, wouldn't you, Nathan?
Ooh, digs. Okay. With that being said, let's – God damn it, I said with that being said.
I know, that's such right a nice moment. Such it's, a nice
it was
moment.
For, it was for the troops. It was for the troops.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not. They're way, way better than that. So if you are enjoying this on a Memorial Day at a barbecue, a picnic, then kudos to you. We're assuming this is going to be like the least listened to episode because everybody's on work vacation pretty much, right, guys?
I think they just call it vacation these days.
Yeah, and I got out of the school year ended on Friday, so there will be no teachers actually going to work on Monday, so. No teacher will be listening to this podcast. So, Ryan, I know you're not listening because your school year is over.
Okay. All right. Teacher references. All right. Well, then the show that's not going to be listened to, maybe that's the title of it. And at the beginning, for what we're going to do for the show, we are going to talk about we're going to preview 2018 free agency. And then we are going to talk about some of the trades that we personally are making right now, talking specific trades that we have executed in. I'm just going to throw out mine in the last week. Have you guys, are you guys trades within the last week?
They are.
Close to that, yeah. Last maybe 2 weeks.
Cool. All right. Well, let's dive right into the show. Before we do that, though, I want to let everyone know they can get a listeners only 30% discount to RotoViz NFL Pass through the NFL podcast homepage at RotoViz. That's rotoviz.com/podcast. Again, got slash right, Dan. Deal with it.
Forward slash.
Your subscription. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of our NFL content, and it also helps support the pod. So you can reach out to us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, also on Twitter, @rotovizradio. So let's dive into the NFL free agents that are coming up in 2018. I feel like, Nathan, you have a couple things to tell us.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to start off by saying when we went through this list on SpotTrack, this seems like an absolutely loaded 2018 free agent class. Granted, I feel like a lot of free agent classes, 9-10 months in advance look loaded, and a lot of them end up being franchise tag or signed extensions in that time period. But there is definitely a lot of talent that could be on the market this time next year. We're going to start off with the quarterbacks, and we'll start off with the guys that – go ahead.
Nathan, could we – let's talk about like the value in exploring free agency at this time, like buying players before they – before the rest of the community, like Marvin Jones, people were sleeping on and suddenly he became valuable in free agency. So maybe talk about that for a second.
Okay. Now that you're going to tell me how to talk, I will continue to do that.
Please continue talking.
All right. So similarly to how people buy draft picks 1 year in advance and they get more expensive as their rookie draft approaches, that can also happen with NFL free agents that are currently NFL players that are not in great situations that could end up in better situations with their new teams a year from now. So if you look at guys that they're in not so great situations right now, or maybe they're in great situations right now and could end up in worse situations, those are definitely buying and selling opportunities. So There's definitely a lot of talent to be had during this class, and it's essential to try and figure out who are the buys and who are the sells.
Okay, Nathan, why don't you now tell us about the particular free agents?
All right, we'll start off with the quarterback position. I was telling Dan before the show, I feel like this is one of the more loaded quarterback classes I've seen in recent memory. Just to rattle off the names, Drew Brees, Kirk Cousins, Sam Bradford, Matthew Stafford, Jimmy Garoppolo, Teddy Bridgewater. The most intriguing name here for me is Kirk Cousins. He's gone on the franchise tag the last two seasons. I'm fairly certain that you aren't allowed to franchise tag a player a third year in a row, so it's going to be extension time for Kirk Cousins, or he'll be going elsewhere. There have been rumors that, Kyle Shanahan will bring him in San Francisco. So for me with Kirk Cousins, actually I think he has a solid group of weapons with Jameson Crowder, Terrell Pryor, and Josh Doctson right now. And if he were to go to San Francisco, I wouldn't like that quite as much, but I think that out of the quarterbacks listed, he's the one that's most likely to move teams. So what would his stock look like if he were to move on from Washington in 2018? We'll start with Dan.
I think the stock definitely takes a hit unless they somehow find a way to bring in a bunch of nice targets for him, because they don't have anything there right now. I mean, when you have Pierre Garçon and that's pretty much it, the running back stable isn't anything to cheer about. But I think this year he'll show off again that he can do a lot with those type of weapons, but I think he definitely moves on just because it seems like that relationship's already kind of broken. So I think he maybe takes a little bit of a dip in value if he does move on. I believe he will move on, but if he does go to San Francisco, he'd take probably just a relative dip in value for a year until they're able to get some talent in around him. And it may take longer than that, but knowing Kyle Shanahan, I mean, he made some moves to get people into Atlanta and to make sure there was more than just Julio to be there. So I think once they actually end up getting a quarterback in San Francisco, they'll make the attempt to actually find some players who can catch the football.
Yeah, Nathan, to elaborate on what you were talking about, the franchise tag, you can franchise tag a guy a third year, basically just gets so outrageously expensive that no NFL franchise in their right mind would actually pull it off. I think you can do unlimited franchise tags off the top of my head, but after the second year, it just gets literally ludicrous in percentage to the top paid guy. So for me, I think it's interesting. I think that Kirk Cousins going to the 49ers seems the most likely, as Dan just indicated. But it wouldn't shock me if he went to somewhere less favorable, that he got a pile of money from, let's say, DeShone Kizer doesn't work out for the Cleveland Browns. They express some interest in him, or some equally bad situation. Let's say, in a hypothetical world, that Blake Bortles doesn't keep his job in Jacksonville, that they go after him.
That's not a hypothetical world. That's a real world.
I said hypothetically very sarcastically. So that we're kind of had these rose colored with free agents in general. We have rose colored glasses on that they'll go to this great spot, the wide receiver Patriots thing, is just getting comical at this point. That's the hot spot for them to go. And Brandon Cooks, granted, did do that this year, but it's one of those ones with Cousins. It wouldn't shock me if he ended up in a situation that wasn't ideal, collected a massive paycheck and a big contract in the process of doing so and was productive. But for fantasy purposes, it wouldn't shock me if that was a bad thing for us.
I think the two names to look out for here are the Vikings quarterbacks, with Sam Bradford and Teddy Bridgewater both becoming available on the free agent market. Obviously this happens every year, but the 2018 NFL draft class of quarterbacks is being hyped with guys like Josh Allen and Sam Darnold. And I'm not sure that the Vikings will be picking high enough to be able to get those guys straight with their pick. Maybe they do a trade up type of thing, but they are in a situation in their offense where it would be a very attractive situation if you add, a first round type quarterback and then you have, Stephon Diggs, maybe a developing Treadwell, Adam Thielen, and Kyle Rudolph, of course. So there are certainly weapons in Minnesota, and I'm not a huge fan of Bradford and Bridgewater post-surgery. I don't think is actually going to be a thing. So I'm certainly looking out for that situation as far as a possible rookie landing spot in 2018.
Yeah, it reminds me of the Bengals, right, before all there. When you have a couple good draft classes in a row, obviously Treadwell doesn't meet that, but there is a window certainly where the team is just willing to throw the book at it, that if they aren't willing to do Bradford, it wouldn't shock me if they ended up with a high-profile free agent. They've already shown the propensity to throw capital at a quarterback to make that team happen.
Yeah, and I think they'll do their best – best work in evaluating Teddy Bridgewater and seeing where he's actually at. I mean, we've seen some OTA work. We've seen him, you know, using that leg a decent amount, which is really surprising because it sounded like for a while he might lose his leg. And then it was like, well, he'll never play football again. And then it was, well, he might be able to play, but he'll never be the same. And
well, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, remember Victor Cruz was like practicing for the entire, 2015 season. And didn't get on the field once. So the recovery process for something this serious is long. Like you can look good on the practice field, but you're not able to execute it like at an elite NFL level.
No, I totally understand that. But Victor Cruz had been away for 3 years, maybe 2.5 years before.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's 100% the case. Not including the season that he actually got injured. I think he was out for 2 seasons.
Okay. So, I mean, I don't think they bring Teddy back unless they truly believe that he's going to be okay and to be good enough to play at the level he was playing at and he was progressing at. I do think that they make a play for Sam Bradford because he makes sense for the style of offense that they run. And a lot of people don't think he was very good, but he actually played pretty darn well last year. That offensive line was atrocious. And he just kind of had to play the nickel and dime game, and it didn't work. So I think that's probably enough about Vikings quarterbacks. I want to talk about Matt Stafford on this.
Okay. What do you want to talk about?
Do we think they're ready to throw another enormous pile of money at Matt Stafford like they did last time?
I think they're ready for an incentive-laden contract with Stafford is my guess.
I think he's played – oh, go ahead, Nathan.
I don't think – Stafford – see, it seems like there's 12 to 15 quarterbacks that they'll just never hit the free agent market. And I think that Stafford is among those 12 to 15 where they'll get an extension.
Andy Dalton strikes me as the same.
Yeah. And Andy Dalton is at the absolute bottom of that tier, but Stafford's around the middle of that tier where he's just good enough to where he's going to get that long-term extension. He's going to get that franchise tag to where he's just never going to hit the open market. So while it'd be interesting to see, you know, a guy like him, what he would command on an open market, but I just don't see Detroit letting that happen.
No, I completely agree with you. Yep.
Yeah, I think he's going to – like you said, he's going to command that top 10, top 12 type money, and they're going to pay it to him because it's Detroit and they're not going to get anything better.
I mean, it's just
unfortunately the case.
It's the exact same reason that Tyrod didn't hit the market this year. Like, he's a mediocre quarterback, and they view him as a far less than mediocre quarterback from a winning game standpoint. And they were like, well, we can't get rid of him. I mean, what are we going to start? EJ Manuel, we're going to bring in. Like, what are we going to do? There's no solution in place. That the EJ NFL Manuel is so
– by the way.
Sorry. I'm not on EJ Manuel, not with the Bills anymore.
Sounds, bro.
All right. So I derailed that pretty quickly. let's close out with the talk of the offseason prior to the draft. Everyone thought he was going to get traded during the draft, after the draft. Jimmy Garoppolo, do we see him as the long-term solution to New England, or do we see New England kind of with their hands strapped saying, okay, we don't really know what to do because Tom Brady says he's going to play forever, and Jimmy Garoppolo, we want him to be the long-term answer, but maybe he's not.
I mean, Jimmy, I don't know what to make of him, to be honest. It seems like they're walking the tightrope of, okay, Tom Brady, you're going to be here for 100 years, and we believe that too. And then they're like, but we're going to leave Jimmy here just in case you don't. And they're like the brass at New England is almost like secretly hoping that they can get off from Tom Brady's contract easily or get rid of him relatively easily. So granted, he's still performing, but I think they see the end. And I think they see Garoppolo as like a guy who's been in that system for so long that he's very, very valuable. I mean, even like Castle, who was in that system for 2 years, was valuable and then fell off once he left. So I actually think Jimmy Garoppolo is the future. And I think that if I'm just putting on like my Swami hat, like I always do on the show, is I see them kind of like at some point forcing Tom Brady out because it's getting too expensive to sign Jimmy Garoppolo to contracts for him not starting football games.
Yeah, I think you see, Jimmy in that draft class was in the same tier with Carr and Bridgewater for me. So I think I was always higher on him than everyone else. And now you've got people saying, well, he's a system quarterback. Look at what everybody else did. Not everybody else had the draft profile that he has. Not everybody else looked the way he did on the field. I mean, yeah, You know, Matt Castle.
I thought you were going to talk about his overall looks, Dan. They're pretty good too.
He's a very beautiful man. We cannot deny that. No,
nobody else looks like Jimmy Garoppolo.
No, he's beautiful. And you can even go back and look at what Matt Castle did on the field and the other idiots that they were able to move on from and trade for a bundle. And none of those guys, Hoyer, yeah. Well, Hoyer's fine. Hoyer's better than Castle was. And I think he's probably the second best case of the system quarterback moving on. And I don't think Jimmy is that system quarterback guy. However, I do believe he is the future in New England. I think he's the heir to the throne. And I agree with you, Eric. I think they've just got to force Tom out. And as he's getting less and less like mobile, he can't get around. He can't get away from people.
And
it seems like he'll play
fading too.
All right, let's move on to the running back position. The king jewel of this past free agent class was Le'Veon Bell. He was franchise tag, so he didn't end up being a free agent. It's going to happen again in 2018. And as we talked about with the free agent franchise tag, the more often you do it, the more consecutive times you do it, the more expensive it gets. So do we think Le'Veon Bell gets franchised that second time and the Steelers pay that premium? Do they let him walk or do they sign that long-term extension with Le'Veon Bell?
I don't know if it's going to be a long-term extension. I think they make a real move to keep him around, but I think it's going to be performance, you know, based and everything like that. I think they do what they can to keep him around, but I don't know that he ends up staying there. It's just there's a lot of risk involved with trying to re-sign someone like that. And I mean, yeah, it's a special talent. He's a top three back in the league, but going back to the old narrative, running backs don't win games. Running backs aren't important. So it's a tough place. It's a really tough place. And we'll see what the Steelers start doing here because you've got Ben who talks about retiring year after year after year. You've got Antonio Brown aging, who has a big contract that's not coming off the books for a while, I don't believe. And then you've got guys like Martavis Bryant who are going to be free agents. If he pulls through, it's a weird spot for the Steelers, I think.
So Dan doesn't think that Le'Veon is back in a Steelers uniform in 2018 possibly. Does that make James Conner at his late second, early third round price tag? Is he a buy for you right now, Eric?
Well, that's kind of what I got at. I think it was last show or whatever show it was we were talking about rookies, maybe two shows ago, where I was like, maybe the Steelers are doing – like it's always this like maybe we don't know something or ignoring something, assuming that a guy is like an ordained stud in the offense. So for me, I think this year is going to be the telling thing for Le'Veon Bell. I think that this is going to be the year where, first off, like if he gets injured, I think that the Steelers are just going to pass on him. And if he puts up mediocre stats or somehow doesn't look up to his godlike status, which granted is possible, I know that like fantasy refuses to accept that possibility. But if he does put up like a wide receiver or a running back two season somehow, or maybe they're splitting the load, maybe he's not the guy that maybe James Conner is actually the guy in relief of him. That this is one of those situations where I think that we're making a lot of assumptions about Le'Veon Bell. I think Le'Veon Bell is a sell for that reason right now, because I think there could be a lot of things that go wrong, even aside from the fact that he gets injured. I think that there's just too many factors in play for me to feel comfortable. So I'm not sure James Conner is a buy in the late second round, but Conner's falling. I mean, here's what I'll say. I've seen Ryan McDowell buying James Conner, and that's when I know that I should raise my brow and be like, okay, maybe I should pay attention to that guy. Cause not that Ryan McDowell knows something, but the price tag is probably too low for the talent.
I agree. I think you hit it right on the nose there, Eric. I think the Steelers are posturing for life without Le'Veon. And I will say, and so I had this revelation the other day about James Conner, like maybe the Steelers are getting ready to move on and maybe get just a couple of years younger, things like that. But I think James Conner in the late second, because that whole entire tier is so jumbled and so messy, there may be a cleaner line to touches by taking James Conner in that late second area instead of one of these RB3s or wide receiver 4s, whatever it happens to be that you're getting into at that point. We don't know with those guys, and there's a serious line to touches here. So I think that may be a spot to actually look to start getting him.
Well, and that's where the question comes up. Is he a system? Like, is it a system situation or is it Le'Veon? Because D'Angelo Williams is putting up nearly the same value this past year. And the guy's, what, 33? So maybe it is truly just a system situation, or maybe the Steelers view it as a system situation. So I think I'm on board. I mean, Le'Veon's value right now is way too high in my eyes. He's going like 105 in startups roughly in that valuation. I think he's the first running back or second running back off the board after Zeke, something in that ballpark. So for me, it's too high. I would be a buyer in the second round valuation. I actually just took him in that valuation, but that's where I'm gonna tap out.
Le'Veon is a sell for the same reason that all of the top three running backs going in the first round of startups are a sell. Much rather just have the safety of a wide receiver, even if it's a guy like AJ Green or Julio Jones, who are a little bit older. I'd still rather have those guys that I think will have longer sustained production.
Well, let me back up. You're saying you would sell Zeke for AJ Green?
No, I'd sell Julio for. I'd sell Le'Veon Bell for AJ Green. I mean, obviously, I want a little bit on top, possibly, but. Basically, I'm trying to sell Le'Veon Bell for one of those wide receivers that are going in that 106 to 110 range.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was saying I've been currently in the one league I picked up Le'Veon at a discount. I've been trying to move him for David Johnson, and that's been that's a guy I greatly prefer. His situation, their commitment to him, it seems like there is all the writing on the wall in the background at the Steelers facility that they're like, we're going to come up with every contingency plan on the planet because we don't trust this guy.
Yeah, and part of that contingency plan, I think the main piece of it, again, is Connor. He's got the NFL body, and I think that's what's most important because I think the system can take care of any of the production that we need to see from that. But he can go through the ringer and still come out the other side. I mean, he's been through hell and back, and he still is a freaking monster. So I know this portion was about Le'Veon, but I think it's more important to start actually getting serious about James Conner being that back in potentially 2018, or if Le'Veon Bell gets hurt, we could see him this year.
Yeah, I foresee this episode only being the free agencies at this point with the way we're talking. So I'm super pumped to talk about it, but just pointing that out, where there's no way we're not going.
Let's get another couple more running backs here. I know this is Nathan's thing, but he sounded like a dog with peanut butter in the roof of his mouth the last time because he's sick. So I'm going to spew some names, and then you guys can give takes. So technically, Devonta Freeman is going to be a free agent. I don't believe there's a chance in hell he sees it.
Nope.
No. Nathan?
I agree. He's yeah, a Falcon.
We're done here.
No way. Okay. So next most intriguing to me is Carlos Hyde. Everyone flipped out about Joe Williams. Kyle Shanahan was punching tables about drafting.
I believe it's banging tables, like small holes in tables.
That same thing. What do we think? Do we think they bring Hyde back, or is this another posture move? Do people really think Joe Williams is the future in San Francisco, or does anyone believe that Carlos Hyde actually could be the future in San Francisco?
All right, here's my hot take. I think Joe Williams is the guy in San Francisco. I actually believe all of this. I believe all of this news, and there's so much smoke, I believe there to be fire. And I've never been a Carlos Hyde guy, so maybe I'm just like believing what I want to believe, but I've been on the – I'm actually drafting Williams anywhere I can find him in the late second.
I don't think Carlos Hyde is the guy, but I don't think that Joe Williams is the guy. It's more of a situation where they have two backs that aren't really good enough to be RB1s, but – or, like one of the best RB1s in the NFL. But they're also not bad enough to where, okay, they have these two running backs and the team is not very good. So I think they ride out Joe Williams and Carlos Hyde for the – near future, to where both those guys are going to be getting 10 to 12 carries per game. I think that they lean towards Hyde a little bit as far as just because he's the veteran. But I think that if we're talking about do we think Hyde is elsewhere, I think that he stays in San Francisco. He may not get the extravagant contract that some might think, but I think that he ends up signing a reasonable extension either midseason or as soon as the season's over. So it's like neither of these guys can answer Joe Williams or Carlos Hyde, but they're both just good enough to where they don't need to invest elsewhere.
See, I disagree with that, Nathan. I think that Hyde is going to be a free agent on the market. And I think somebody will give him, like, as long as he doesn't incur another injury this year, I think he'll get a reasonable, like almost like Eddie Lacy type contract from this offseason. I think somebody will take him. But I think the 49ers are so far away that they're not going to sign him for any reasonable contract, especially if Williams seems like he's competent in that backfield.
I find myself kind of in between on this one. I do believe that Carlos Hyde could be the guy, and I was never really a big fan of Joe Williams, but the hype seems kind of real, and I don't know how to feel about it. It's one of those weird ones where it's like, oh, that's just coach talk, but usually they don't come out and like confirm that, yes, I wanted to take him in the second, and I wanted to take him in the third, and then I wanted him in the fourth. Like, you don't usually don't get those kind of confirmations. So what I see happening is I see Carlos Hyde having a strong year, assuming he's healthy, and then I think they move on. They help Carlos get paid, and then they make Joe Williams the guy. And if he's not the guy, maybe they bring in a middle round back next year because it's another strong class, and they roll with a two running back system, kind of like how Atlanta went, even though they had two really good running backs in Atlanta. You're not going to get those that type of quality. But I think Shanahan would like to have two running backs to lean on for the passing game, for the rushing game, whatever he can use them for. I feel like that's how it's going to go down.
All right. That's enough.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Mushmouth.
Transition.
Hello.
All right, let's transition from the San Francisco running back talk. We can just go through these quickly. Isaiah Crowell, he's a guy that was supposed to be RFA the whole offseason. He was kind of waiting for it, and it took forever, but he ended up being a Brown because the time ran out. So I think that Crowell probably ends up re-signing with the Browns as a guy, you know, just a tandem duo with Duke Johnson. So I don't really see him going anywhere. I think that the one that Fantasy Twitter is obviously going to get excited about, and maybe that they're just tired of it, but Jerick McKinnon, Fantasy Twitter darling, now that Dalvin Cook is in town and Matt Asiata is gone. But
wait. Let's back up. Purple Sloth, RIP. Silver
he's
Sloth.
He's with the Lions. He's with the Lions now.
Silver Sloth, and blue sloth. What's up?
Silver Sloth.
Jesus. All right. So with McKinnon, do we see him as a fantasy viable option elsewhere? Or is he just forever estranged to not do anything?
All right, I'll come in here. First off, McKinnon, I care a lot less about McKinnon than I do the guy you mentioned earlier, Crowell. which McKinnon, I do think he's in trouble. I just don't think he's a complete player, and I think the Vikings are not going to be able to put him on the field because of that. I think that Cook, I'm not sure that Cook's the answer. I've actually found myself hating every pick I've had to make at like 106 for Cook. And there's not a player that I want to take there, but I'm like holding my breath, crossing my fingers, hoping that it pans out after that. Like, he just has the signs to me of like a player who's not going to pan out, just from a metrics standpoint, from a, granted, not tape standpoint, I guess, but I worry about him from a metric standpoint and from an NFL standpoint. So Crow is a guy that is super interesting to me. I think that he's a guy who's going to get all the opportunity in the world this year, and I think that offensive line is getting a lot better this year. So he's a player that I'm buying, although his valuation is getting way too high now. He's starting to turn into like a late first-round pick valuation. Which I think I actually saw a Twitter poll today that said he was like worth the 110, which probably is about right. But that basically means everybody else has caught on to the stake.
Yeah, people are catching up with Crowell's value. And I've never really been a big fan of him, but he just continues to produce, and Cleveland seems to like him enough to tag him again. And obviously that line does, you know, can do wonders for whoever's going to be running behind it. So I agree. I think Cleveland's going to roll with the two back thing with Duke and with Crowell. As far as the Minnesota backs go, you know, I've always been a McKinnon guy. I think it'll be more helpful to get him in a different system, somewhere where they actually know how to use explosive players, because clearly Minnesota has no idea how to do that. The last time they figured that out was Percy Harvin in like 2009.
Yeah, they're making a point of drafting really poor combines at this point.
Right. So they just want slow players that are very good at football.
It's like, man, I hope this guy pans out in 4 years. This should be great.
So I really hope that McKinnon gets somewhere favorable to him, whether it's, you know, good for fantasy or not.
Where is a favorable spot for McKinnon? Like, his quick style, I mean, I'm like trying to think of locations that he could go. obviously the Giants come off to me as being a pretty good spot.
Dallas would actually be a phenomenal spot for Jerick McKinnon. I think New York's a good spot in that kind of Shane Vereen role. We'll see if he stays around at all.
Doubt it.
Other than, you know, maybe, you know, when they had Chip Kelly, I would have said the Eagles. That would have been like the most perfect fit in the universe. But I think just anywhere that has a role for a you know, pass catching back, because that's pretty much what he is. He can handle some carries, but get him in space with the football and he'll be good. So I don't think he's going to generate much value unless he signs somewhere like that. I'll be holding all of my shares so you guys can stop sending me offers, those zero of you that are.
Yeah, I was about to say, I've already sold you all of my shares of McKinnon, so enjoy those. I picture you playing violin on the Titanic, by the way.
Right? It's the smallest one.
That's the string quartet on the Titanic. You'll be going down with the ship. And then when he busts out of the league, he'll be like, jolly good day, sir, to like the other you that's up there playing.
It'll be perfect. All right, let's hit on the last person of any relevance on this list, even though he's probably the worst player on this list, Jeremy Hill. Do we think he catches on and has any sort of actual role anywhere other than maybe being a change of pace, you know, like 100 carry a year type guy?
No.
So we brought up the Silver Sloth. I think he's probably the new Silver Sloth somewhere else. He's proven proficient on the goal line, and he's proven immensely inefficient in carries. So that's probably the role that I see him taking over, and he's out of the league in 3 years. Book it. Good day.
That's like the least hot take ever. 3 years from now, he's out of the league. He'll be like 36 by then.
Silver Sloth.
I mean, Zeke's going to be out of the league in 3 years, much less Jeremy.
Running back.
Whoa.
All right. No more craziness. Let's move to wide receivers. Obviously there's some really, really big names on this list. Just going down from the top, DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, Alshon Jeffrey, Jarvis Landry, Allen Robinson. I mean, it's loaded top to bottom.
Wasn't Alshon on the list last year? Wasn't that what happened?
He only signed a 1-year contract.
Yeah, because he's terrible. Go on.
Got it prior.
Jesus. And then you've got guys like Jordan Matthews, Larry Fitzgerald, who's 106 years old.
Jarvis Landry.
I already said Jarvis Landry.
He already said that.
Yeah, exactly. God,
see,
worth repeating.
Everything.
He's Jameson Crowder, but two rounds earlier, like you tweeted.
I just retweeted a guy who said that, and I don't disagree.
Oh, boy. And then you've got Nathan's boy, Marquise Lee, John Brown, Martavis Bryant. It's a really fun wide receiver group right now. Obviously, this is going to change by the time, you know, free agency actually rolls around. But let's start at the top with DeAndre Hopkins. Eric, do you think there is any chance at all that Houston lets DeAndre walk?
I do not.
I don't either. They got rid of the Brock Osweiler contracts. So they have plenty of cap room, and so I think that they're good with Hopkins being their number one. I mean, Will Fuller they drafted in the first round, but I don't think they ever had intentions of him being the number one wide receiver on the roster. He's the perfect number two to stretch the field, so you still need Hopkins to, you know, get the high volume of catches, which is what he did well in his breakout season.
Absolutely agree. It's a perfect fit there. Let's hope Deshaun Watson pans out and loves to force feed his wide receiver one. They can sprinkle in some targets to Will Fuller, but I still believe, you know, Nuke's going to be a wide receiver one for the foreseeable future. He's still young, and let's hope they lock him in. So let's move to the next guy who I truly believe could move on, even though I think they'll tag him. Sammy Watkins. Nathan, where are we at with Sammy? I know you're a big, big fan, but there's some possibility he finds himself an actual team to play on.
Yeah, I've been buying Sammy everywhere because he's been at a discount. He's a guy that I think is, you know, a top six, top seven startup talent. He's being sold for the price of a mid-second round startup pick. So I'm all over the Sammy bandwagon right now, whether it be, you know, in Buffalo continued or elsewhere. I think that it's all about what happens with his contract as far as how much I'm going to be buying into it next year. For example, when Alshon Jeffrey only signed, and we'll get to him in a second, Alshon Jeffrey only signed the 1-year deal in Philadelphia that made me pause on my buying a little bit. And if Sammy Watkins signs a 1-year deal elsewhere or even with Buffalo next year, that will have me a bit worried where it's just like, okay, these teams don't want to buy in on the injury issues. But basically the NFL and NFL teams will tell us what they think of Sammy with the contract that they give him in the 2018 offseason.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I don't think he's going to run into an Alshon situation, because I think a lot of the 1 year contracts that show up for a high profile player, the injuries do concern me, but I don't think other teams are going to be concerned. I think once he, like, when he's out on the field killing it, as long as he doesn't manage to injure himself again, he's going to be just fine in free agency. The Bills seem hell-bent on ruining all the talent that they have either fallen into or overpaid for, Tyrod and Watkins. So for me, it wouldn't shock me. I agree with you, Dan, that he could be out of the league, or out of the league, out of Buffalo.
Just like Zeke. No, yeah.
Damn me to the CFL. Let's go.
Yeah, Dan, you said he was out of the league. I agree completely with you. I think he could very easily be off the Bills, but I don't think that's any indictment of him. And I think that that's an organization that seems to be proving itself incompetent on a regular basis as far as evaluating talent and keeping a winning team in place. So if Watkins goes somewhere else, I'll be buying, but I think his price is going to be way too high. His price is currently very, very high. I think he's still being drafted at the end of the first round. I think there's too many question marks for that valuation for me. Dan, you did, or I think Nathan disagrees. Dan, you would disagree with that as well.
I put him in, you know, Nathan said top 6-7 startup talent. And if he were healthy and
yes,
doing what he did as a rookie and producing the way we've seen him, I can't really argue with that. I mean, I'd take him over Amari Cooper. I'd probably take him over Antonio Brown and Julio Jones if he, you know, let's assume he had been producing. I mean, he's still, what, 23, 24?
Yep.
And this year is going to be all about the foot. If that thing doesn't fall off and he's able to be out there for, let's say, 14, 15, I mean, cross our fingers, 16 games, I think he's back with the Bills if he can prove that he can stay healthy. And we know he can produce. He's already done it. He's already done it with brutal quarterbacking. So I think there's a better chance he's in Buffalo than not. But I think if he gets injured, he's gone. And I still think someone gives him a massive contract just because of his age and because of what we've seen, his draft stock, everything. So that's an interesting one, though, for sure.
All right, let's transition to a pair of Philadelphia Eagles wide receivers. They added to the repertoire with Alshon Jeffrey with that one-year deal that we talked about a little bit earlier. And so now Carson Wentz has Alshon Jeffrey, Jordan Matthews, Torrey Smith, certainly better weapons than he did a year ago. So what do we see happening with these two guys, Alshon and Jordan Matthews? Do we see them getting extensions from the Eagles after the one-year deal, or do we see them going elsewhere? We start with Dan.
This one, I didn't think I'd find myself here, but I believe that they're both going to re-sign extension, or both re-sign with the Eagles, because the Eagles are going to realize that they need quality wide receivers to make Carson Wentz look even a little bit like a quarterback.
Come on.
So Ertz is still going to be there. He's still going to be a nice red zone target, a nice over the middle piece, along with Jordan Matthews if they bring him back. He's a great slot wide receiver. He cannot play outside. Stop trying to do that to him. That's where Alshon comes into play. And that would make that offense as potent as it needs to be. And I think they would easily make the Eagles better with both of them there. It'll make Carson Wentz better. It'll be them making him look good rather than him looking them look good. But, it's going to be – and it might be to the point where they maybe don't have the money to bring them both in if they both have solid years and they're both absorbing all the targets that they should. It could get a little bit messy, and it might be a – take your best player, and they may end up just trying to re-sign Alshon and letting J-Matt walk, hoping they find a different type of slot wide receiver.
All right, here's my hot take. Neither is on the team next year. I think both are going to be free agents, and I think both are going to go.
Is that good or bad for either of their stock?
I worry immensely. Here's my worry about Alshon is injury concerns are being forgotten about, but even like the fact that his personality, I feel like, and his character issues on teams and in locker rooms seems to be presenting itself now. That is the main reason that I'm not interested in having Alshon, that no team was willing to sign such an elite talent to a couple year contract strikes me as very concerning. And then as far as J-Mac goes, I think that he's replaceable in any solid possession receiver. So if they're going to have to, if they can sign him to a relatively cheap contract, they probably will. But I just see nothing out of J-Matt that strikes me as being something that you're not going to be able to replace in the third round of the NFL draft.
All right, let's move.
Hold on, before you move on, just to quickly argue that, Eric, Alshon did have a multi-year offer. He actually had one from the Minnesota Vikings, and I think he had one other one, but he wanted to go someplace where he thought maybe he could prove himself best and where he fit best and maybe had a good chance at winning. And while I don't think the Eagles have a great chance at winning, he's maybe thinking it's best for him that he can be the wide receiver one and absorb a bunch of targets, make himself look good, stay on the field. Obviously, the health is the most important thing here, but he probably felt that that was his best avenue towards future money rather than signing a 2 or 3 year deal with a place that's just going to dink and dunk and not really make him look great. So have an offer, by the way.
I think both is speculation. I think that we're not 100% certain of the situation that we're not 100% certain of the offers and discussions that Alshon had. The contract that he ultimately ended up signing is very concerning to me. It feels like a prove it deal for a guy who should have gotten like a 4 year, I don't know, like $100 million. No, that's too high. $60 million contract, something like that.
Yeah, that's totally, totally fair. And I do think it is a prove it contract. And I think it may be a little bit of a self-induced prove it contract because he wants to show people that he can still do it if he's healthy.
No, and that's totally fair. If he did self-induce, then I'm misreading the situation completely. And actually, the fact that he left Chicago in the first place is kind of striking to me. So it's
leaving John Fox in his dumpster fire is not that alarming to me.
Yeah, that team got turned into a hellhole real quick.
Sure, it's
good luck, Mitchell Trubisky. All right,
let's be fair. John Fox will not be there. Like after this next year, John Fox has gotten there. You know it.
Yeah, for sure. Let's move on to another pair of teammates. And this is the Jaguars wide receivers. And this is actually surprising because I was telling Dan before the show, I was like, A-Rob signed an extension last year, right? And apparently he did not. So you got Allen Robinson. Got Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee poised to hit 2018 free agency. I think that like with DeAndre Hopkins, A-Rob is one of the more likely on this list to still stay put and get that long-term extension.
Yep.
The Jaguars will see, we really screwed up by giving Hurns the extension and not A-Rob first, but they have the cap room to do that. And with Lee, he's the type of guy where maybe because they gave Hurns that extension, they can't really afford to give Lee a, you know, mid to long-term contract. So I think that Lee hops on elsewhere as a wide receiver two, high-end wide receiver three on the NFL depth chart.
I totally agree. Yeah, I think they don't really have much of a choice but to bring Allen Robinson back. We've seen he's the real deal. We've seen he can actually play. You know, the bruise on that team is Blake Bortles. And even, you know, the garbage time numbers we see these guys put up is pretty incredible, really. But I don't think we're going to get to see that as much anymore. I'm hoping that they move on for these wide receivers' sake. But, yeah, Marquise Lee, let's hope he gets into a nice spot. You know, like you said, a wide receiver two or like a high-end wide receiver three, maybe in like a Drew Brees-type offense where it can support multiple weapons. So I think moving forward, you're going to see a lot of Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson. It's you know, like you said, Nathan, it's kind of surprising that they gave – Allen Hurns what was a pretty good sized contract before they were able to re-sign A-Rob, and maybe it was just the, well, we can't afford you right now, or we're not going to try to deal with that big of a contract right now because they knew Robinson was so much worth so much more than Hurns.
Well, the difference is that UDFAs get a 3-year deal with the 4th-year option, right? Whereas draft picks get the 4-year deal,
and I suppose a tag's going to be worth less than what they're going to end up paying him.
I agree with you, Dan. I don't think A-Rob is going anywhere. I think he's going to be there for the long term. Marquise Lee is a question mark, I guess. I really haven't done much thinking about him. I know, Nathan, you like Marquise Lee a lot. I almost don't care. I think he showed production last year, but I think he's going to end up moving on at some point. I think this team, though, the concern I have with this team is that they are going to look very, very different than they did these last 3 years, where they're finally starting to get defense in place. They're hopefully going to get rid of Blake Bortles, where they're going to stop trailing. The garbage time is going to go away. And they might turn into a team with a veteran quarterback who's trying to make ends meet, who's creating mediocre production for everybody. So I do worry that the team identity changes. I still really like A-Rob at his price at like the end of the first round. I think that's really nice. But it wouldn't shock me if this entire team had an identity crisis here coming up in the next year or two.
I think that's a very real possibility. I think this defense on paper looks like it could be one of the better defenses in the league. And that's right. Something that Jacksonville hasn't even sniffed in I don't know how long. So this is going to be, like you said, Eric, this could be a very, very different looking team. They just went out and spent a ridiculous amount of draft capital on a running back and Leonard Fournette. Obviously, we saw the Cowboys do it, and it worked all right for them, but that offensive line is just a touch better. But this team could go to a ground-and-pound style, and we can win.
They'll be losing games, losing games 13-10 instead of 47-30.
that's exactly how it ended up being too, because the defense is looking really, really strong. So I hope it doesn't make that turn, because I do enjoy some of these garbage time points. Even though maybe I don't want it to keep going, because I'm kind of getting sick of people cheering on Blake Bortles.
All right, let's close out the wide receivers with a interesting juxtaposition between two wide receivers. There's all the hype and very little of the production with Dante Moncrief, and very little of the hype and all the production with Jarvis Landry. Do we see either of these two guys leaving teams? For me, I'll start us off. Dante Moncrief, I don't see this as a guy that the Colts are going to prioritize keeping. I think that they might try and give him that like a 3-year, like $20 million year or something along those lines. But he hasn't done anything throughout his career. He's gotten some touchdowns. He's had some red zone production, but I just feel like, we've hyped him so much. And I think that the dynasty community in a way has gotten like hype fatigue, where he's not getting the same, return and trade value that he was, a year ago, 2 years ago. So the dynasty community is kind of wised up. We'll see if the NFL has the same, view of him when it comes to free agency. And then with Jarvis Landry, I think that he is one of the guys that I think it's very, very slim chance that he ends up leaving. I think that he ends up being, that top targeted guy in the Tannehill offense for years to come.
Yep, I totally agree with the Landry portion. I think obviously he's their best wide receiver right now. Devontae Parker has the tools to be a high end wide receiver. We just haven't seen him put it together yet. Obviously, he's shown some flashes, and like you said, Nathan, the dynasty community started to get wise with the Moncrief thing, but they still haven't really caught up with Parker. He's shown flashes, but we've seen everybody else show flashes too. Jeff Janis has shown flashes. Kristen Michael showed an 8-week flash, heck, beginning of last season. I don't know that he ever gets there. So I think Jarvis is, like you said, there for the long run. And I think he works really well on that offense. Them bringing back Kenny Stills, though, at a sizable contract is a little bit weird to me. I don't think that's a posture move. Obviously, Landry and Stills are very different players, but they have Leonte Carew there. He could fill in that Landry role pretty nicely. It's a weird thing that kind of stuck in the back of my mind. So maybe we'll go back to that. And then the Moncrief thing, I think he'll be just cheap enough because he hasn't really done much other than catch touchdowns. I think he'll be cheap enough where the Colts can still keep him. I've never been on that train. He was always too expensive for me, but I think he's a nice complimentary piece, and he makes a lot of sense in that offense, the way they've always used tight ends, and it complements T.Y. Hilton so well.
Yeah, I mean, this organization always seems a little bit bipolar in the sense of, like, they're like, all right, we're set at wide receiver, and let's throw Philip Dorsett in there. Like, it seems that they don't quite know what they want, so it wouldn't shock me if they let Moncrief walk, but I agree with you, Dan. I think he fits super nice into that offense. So I think he's a guy I'm looking at his estimated cap hit next year, and it looks like – or his estimated market value, it looks like SportsTrack.com is recommending him to be or estimating him to be about a $10 million asset on the free agency market. So I think that's probably where his valuation is. And that's pretty expensive for the Colts. So it wouldn't shock me if they let him walk, if that was truly the valuation that that came away from him entering free agency. As far as Landry goes, I just don't think there's a snowball's chance that Landry hits free agency unless, and this is going to be my hot take for the day, unless Isaiah Ford turns into...
Oh, stop it with your Isaiah Ford stuff.
Yeah. This is it. No. This is it right here. And let me speak. Isaiah Ford can be the Binky of a quarterback. Granted, he was drafted in the seventh round, fell off completely. He can be the Binky. So if and actually in my article for Ford, I compared him to Jarvis Landry before knowing he went to the Dolphins. That's if he does pan out, granted, long shot, then maybe they're like, that's redundancy and that's a lot of money for Landry and we have three more years on Ford. I highly doubt it, even my homerism and belief in Ford. I think that's highly unlikely. But that would pretty much be the only situation I see where Landry does not get a contract and stay with the Dolphins.
All right, let's move on to the tight end position. We've got three that are of relevance, and we'll start out with my boyfriend, Tyler Eifert. And as I was looking at this, the thought kind of popped in my head. They spent the early round pick on Tyler Boyd last year. They spent the first round pick on John Ross, middle round pick on Josh Malone. While there isn't exactly a correlation between, you know, wide receivers and tight ends, they may have just been saying, okay, we're going to load up on wide receivers, and we have Tyler Kroft, we have CJ Uzoma. We have all these different weapons. We don't necessarily need to sign Eifert long term, and he's had the injury concerns, much like some other guys we've talked about tonight. So I think that of the major names, the guys that have the most dynasty value, he might be the one that has the most value that is going to change teams in 2018 to where, you know, the Bengals have set them up nicely to, obviously it's not a very good move to lose a talent like Eifert, but they can definitely sustain a hit like that.
I don't think they let Eifert go. I think it is very, very unlikely. I'll just leave it at that.
I think there's actually a really good chance he leaves. I think he's going to be too expensive. He's shown that dominance in the red zone, and I think there's enough teams that need a piece like that that don't have that dominant force in the red zone. I think they just won't be able to afford him in the end. And like you said, Nathan, they've spent some decent amount of capital on offensive weapons, and their backup tight ends aren't terrible. You know, Tyler Kroft can play. He'd be just fine replacement, and they just might not lean on the position as much as they have. And another reason why they might let him go, he might be too expensive, and his injury history doesn't really help his value to them as much. They've seen, you know, the missed time. They've had to kind of push through all of that, even with the nice production while he's been on the field. Not having him there for a lot of times makes that offense struggle. And I think maybe they let him go and they kind of just get the most out of AJ Green for the next 3-4 years that they can while he's still running at full speed and playing at an elite level, because he didn't get a ton of red zone work because of Tyler Eifert. And I think maybe they're realizing that the offense can be more efficient when they're getting those looks to AJ Green rather than Tyler Eifert. They're scoring one way or another, but I think they realize that they need to use AJ Green a little bit more in that sense.
I disagree.
Long pause to disagree.
Yep. All right. Let's move on to the very last tight ends in Jimmy Graham and CJ Fedorowicz. This show's going along with just this segment. So, where are you guys at on Graham? Can he come back from the injury? And CJ Fedorowicz, love him, still a value.
Eric, did you watch the NFL last year? Because Jimmy Graham already came back from the injury.
Jimmy Graham was alive and well last year, Eric. If I know you use your time machine.
I did see. I'm still not sure I believe, though.
That's fair. I think.
Okay, maybe what I'll put is dynasty value. I still don't think believes.
I think the age and the injury, you know, I think you're right. I think that's still, you know, kind of hindering his value. So maybe he's a good buy, and maybe he has been a good buy, and people are just kind of looking past him. One, because he's a tight end. Two, because he's like 63 years old.
Well, what's okay? He's what, 29, right, or 30?
He's definitely 30, right?
What's the valuation of Jimmy Graham right now? What are you willing to pay for?
Hold on, but before you even get into that, what would you take him over the three rookie tight ends?
Yes, no. I would.
No.
You would rather have Jimmy Graham than OJ Howard and Evan Engram and David Njoku?
I personally would, yes.
So you have him as like a 107?
Okay, no, that's more I have those tight ends in the early second, and I have...
Right, why I was looking at player rather than pick, because I think that's more telling.
No, I don't have any of those tight ends yet, and it's just my personal philosophy that I'm not going to... I'm very nervous, and I know they're all stud tight ends, but I just have no desire to draft tight ends in the first round. They just take too long to pan out in my eyes. And granted, that may be me with my get off the damn lawn kids attitude of things. But
that's
kind of where I stand. I still would I'd love to have Delanie Walker on my team, not over those guys, but still Jimmy Graham probably I would. But I feel like I'm pretty low on Jimmy Graham, so maybe I'm even lower on those tight ends.
Nathan.
Yeah, Jimmy Graham entering his age 31 season, coming off the major injury, and he did have a very solid season, 65 catches, 923 receiving yards, 6 touchdowns. Obviously not the same guy that was, getting 1,215 receiving yards and 16 touchdowns in 2013. But so I don't think he's ever going to be that guy again. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy that a team's willing to invest, a 3 or 4 year contract. He's going to be the type of guy like Antonio Gates where I think he's going to be riding out, 1-2 year contracts for the rest of his career, whether it be in Seattle still or elsewhere. He may just think, oh, this team runs too much, or this team just doesn't throw the tight end enough where he ends up going elsewhere. But for me, Graham, I think the rest of his career is riding out on short-term deals.
Yeah, I can't really argue it. I mean, I think we're probably still a little bit low on Jimmy Graham, but there's a lot of risk there. And he's getting a little older. So let's talk about our last tight end on the list.
Whoa, CJ Fedora. End of show warning. The show's ending.
Oh, I wanted to talk about CJ Fedora Goat.
No. I know. That's what I'm saying. We have one more player. I'm just letting the listeners know.
Okay.
Goat alert.
I picked him up everywhere last year before the breakout when we realized that, hey, Houston has some pretty good tight ends here. Let's try to get lucky and hit one.
Money in the bank.
He was pretty darn good last year. Obviously, he was getting peppered with targets from a terrible quarterback, but I mean, he's solid. He looked the part. He played the role very, very well, and I don't think that changes much, and I think it maybe even increases a little bit, and they can get a little more efficient in his usage. So I'm still a big fan. I think he's probably low-end tight end one, maybe high-end tight end two, just because you kind of have to maybe sprinkle in some of the rookie guys in that zone. And I think we could be in for some nice production yet again.
Yeah. I'm trying to pull up Fedorowicz's this is going to be a real test.
Spelling CJ Fedorowicz.
Give up. I was gonna look him up, but you're absolutely right.
54 catches for 559 and 4 touchdowns.
Well, look, towards the end of the year, he had a couple double digit catch games, 7+ catch games, as I recall. And if you've got it in front of you, Nathan, maybe you can corroborate such a thing. But he was a massive part of the offense. But I do worry that he was just the release valve for a really, really bad Brock Osweiler. But I still think that he proved himself at least to be competent enough to be in consideration. And he's basically free in all dynasty conversations. Like he's probably at best worth a third round valuation. I've seen him going very, very late in startups. So it wouldn't shock me that he ends up basically being free. And I have him on all my teams because of that. So Fedorowicz is a guy that I think you should, if you can go out and make a trade for him, almost like an Austin Hooper. Who has really nice upside? And I think it's Nathan who disagrees on Austin Hooper. No, but I think he has really nice upside.
Hooper. I traded for Hooper and Dan bashed me. So
okay, so it's Dan who hates Austin Hooper, but it's a guy who has a lot of target upside, target share upside in the tight end position that is really all you can hope for. So I think that I'm on the Fedorowicz train for basically a third round valuation if he does pan out to be a release valve if Deshaun Watson really does turn out to be kind of a dump off pass guy or doesn't understand the NFL, gets into a lot of dump off situations. I feel like Fedorowicz could have a good year because of that.
Fedorowicz, for me, he's the perfect example of a guy that just doesn't get moved very often because the guy that has him is going to value him more than the market necessarily agrees with. So, I mean, if you're going to buy CJ Fedorowicz, the time is more likely to do it in maybe a rookie free agent draft. He's a free agent or in, a startup atmosphere. So, because the fact of the matter is that you're probably gonna have to pay like a mid to late second in the trade market, because someone's, you're gonna offer like 304 for Fedorowicz, and then the guy's gonna be like, well, I would have just picked Gerald Everett with 304, so why don't I just keep Fedorowicz? So, you know, the for those that have been waiting up Derwitz all his career, and then he started producing in his third season. So, yeah. I like Fedorowicz, but I don't think he's really a trade candidate.
Yeah, and actually looking at his offensive numbers, it looks like he had between 4 and 6 catches pretty much consistently from week 4 on. So if you've ever owned a tight end in fantasy who isn't one of the premier 3, that's not so bad.
I like it. I think he's going to be, you know, a prominent role player in that offense again this year. I think he'll probably see around that 90 to maybe 100 target range. Depends on how good or bad that offense is and how good that defense still is. If they're trailing a lot, they'll be throwing more. Obviously, that's how it works. So we could see a rise in targets for Nuke. We could see him for Fuller. And I think we definitely see him for Fedorowicz. So as far as long value goes, I don't know. That's a tough one to kind of pinpoint, because
I don't think it matters, Dan. Like for tight ends, I don't think like forecasting. It's almost like running backs. Forecasting 4 years into the future is kind of irrelevant. Like you might as well just take the production you can get now and deal with it later.
Very true. Very true. Totally agree. I'm just trying to think if Houston, since this is a free agent segment, I'm just trying to think if Houston's going to value him enough to give him any sort of contract to stick around.
I think they do. Because the tight end, even in franchise, even in a franchise tag situation, is still very cheap. Tight end contracts are very cheap.
Right. And so I think we see Fedorowicz with Houston at least through 2019. Whatever kind of tag he may receive, if he gets a tag or he gets another contract. So let's do some sort of wrap up, I think.
Okay. All right. On that note, let's go ahead and take care of the show. Good Lord. How long did we go, Dan? I want to say it's been like an hour on one topic.
Yep, 1 hour on one amount of free agents.
Well, I appreciate you guys sticking with us. Make sure that if you enjoyed us talking about free agents and just goofballing around, know that you can support the pod by subscribing to and rating the RotoViz radio channel on iTunes. Do that, you'll be eligible to compete against some of the RotoViz podcasters, myself included, and writers in a $35 best ball league hosted by our friends over at the FFPC. The winner of each league will receive a year-long RotoViz pass on top of their cash prize. So go to iTunes, leave a review with your name in it, and then email us at rotoviz@gmail.com. Can't speak right now, guys. I'm so excited about those free agents. To let us know that you want to be in the RotoViz league, and we'll get that set up for you. So I'm done talking. I think I'm going to mail it in and have the rest of my Sunday fun day.
Have a few more Coors Lights and see if you can't slur a few more words.
Hey, don't judge me.
Judgy Judgerson over here.
I just want to point out Michael Jordan flu game. I was pretty clutch today, so no big deal.
All right. The Michael Jordan flu game.
LeBron's still better.
Okay, well, not with the flu, apparently. Okay, Nathan, your performance was still insanely mediocre. So on that note, we will catch up with you guys next week.